Welcome to Double Burst, a podcast about Dice Masters. We are a group of Utah players that want to bring you the latest Dice Masters news, strategies, tips, and more. Whether you're a new or seasoned player, we hope this show has something for you. I'm KT Data, one of your hosts, and welcome to episode 19. In this episode, we help you prepare for the next round of WKOs by talking about our predictions, budget cards for expensive meta cards, and a special guest where we'll be talking about building a community at your local store. So let's kick it off with a quick updates from the Rules Forum.
Okay, guys, I am here with Dr. J. How you doing, Dr. J?
Doing good. How are you?
We're actually going to do a quick half segment because between our last recording and when we actually published, WizKids posted a couple new rulings. They posted about six new rulings in the WizKids Rules Forum.
Yep.
If you guys haven't heard of the WizKids Rules Forum, you can find it at win.wizkids.com/BB, B as in boy. And they occasionally put up rulings. So they put up six of them. We're not going to go through all six of them. We actually picked the two that seemed to be the most relevant to the new Green Arrow Flash set that there have been a couple discussions. The first one is from Star Labs, and it's global and what you do when you don't have enough sidekicks. So Star Labs' ability is, for his global, you pay a bolt and a shield, move a sidekick die from your used pile to your prep area, and field another sidekick from die from your used pile. And they're asking, what happens if you only, say, have one sidekick in your use pile? Can you do the global, or do you have to not use the global at all?
Yeah, and this is an example of when WizKids has kind of leaned on their rule that you do as much as you can for when you're resolving an effect. So you can pay two, even if there's only one in your use pile. You get to move that one die to your prep area because that's the first half of that global, is move a die from your use pile to your prep area. Then move a die from your use pile into the field, the sidekick die. And so you can pay two to move it to your use pile. It's not ideal, but I mean, lots of times when you have that two energy, you might as well use it.
Yeah, sure. Why not? If you're not going to use the energy for anything else. And it's a good thing. So if you ever get stuck on a global where it's like, do this and this and this, the general rule is you do as much as you can following the sentence. So the first thing, then the second thing, and the third thing, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And the next one is about the common katana. And she has an ability, while a katana die is in your prep area, if your opponent rolls one or more question marks, even if they re-roll this die, you may pay one life and field one katana die at level one. And the question was, do you field that the katana that was in your prep area, or say if you have multiple katanas, can you pick which one to field?
Yeah, this was another example of the kind of ambiguous wording that sometimes goes on cards.
Especially for new players who aren't kind of used to the syntax of how WizKids puts things.
Yeah, so you do field the one from your prep area. This is really helpful ruling, I think, but I would have really liked to see them answer the question about my question about the other version. Is it the uncommon one that goes to your used pile? Because it says when you roll two question marks, field katana at level one. It doesn't say field a katana die. So do I field all my katanas or do I just field one? And in that case, you probably fall back to the go with the weaker of the weaker ruling and only field one. Mm-hmm. So those were the two that we decided to pick out. The other four were really
a little bit more general questions. So you guys can go check those out. And if you think we missed one of those, let us know. Shoot us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst.
Yep.
All right, Dr. J, we're going to get you back in a second to talk about WKO predictions.
Sounds good.
Okay, guys, we are back. We have Steve the Sage,
hey.
Dr. J.
How's it going?
The KO King. And we're here to talk to you guys about the WKO predictions because November 5th, WizKids is going to start their next round of what they call the competitive season with their WKO round one. First, I want to just put a disclaimer. There is still some time from us recording to the WKO for WizKids to issue rulings on different things. I know there's a couple teams out there that are some questions that may or may not change from now and then. So this is, what is today, October 2nd or October 1st?
Yeah.
Yep. Hopefully they have rulings on the vicious struggle one way or another. Mm-hmm.
But what we wanted to do is kind of prepare you guys a little bit to see what you're going to expect and different ways you can put things into your team that may help you at the WKOs. FYI, unfortunately, Utah's not going to have a WKO, so WizKids, if you're listening, think of us for round two?
Please. Please.
All right. Or so, if any of you listeners want to, you know, put up with us, we'll come to you.
Yep. Okay, so when we start, so we saw the previous worlds and nationals and worlds. What were kind of the top teams that came out of those two competitions? And that's probably a good predictor on what you may see at this WKO.
Yeah, definitely Bard and Vicious Struggle are the two dominant teams right now.
Give a brief preview of each. So
the Bard is a character that when he attacks, he gives all other attacking characters plus one attack and plus one defense for every other attacking character. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. So if you attack with the Bard and three other characters and a bunch of sidekicks, they all get this enormous buff, and it's really, really hard to stop all that damage. So that's basically how a Bard team works. They pair it up with Elf Thief and some other cheapo cards.
Field all the little guys and then swing as fast as you can, because usually there's an open field or only one or two blockers.
Yeah, yeah. And the Vicious Struggle team is kind of like a coin flip. If I win, go first.
So pretty much whoever buys two Vicious Struggles and who can roll 10 fists to use the Luke Cage Global, which deals each opponent one damage, but if you have two Vicious Struggles, it's going to be two for one as you go to that. So,
and it's not impossible to win going second, but man, is it hard.
It is hard.
So, full disclaimer, I believe that the issue with both of these teams is the same, and it has to do with ramp.
All right.
So anything turn three or four kill is ramp is a big issue. So, and that's increased now. If you look at Vicious Struggle, if you had Rip Hunter's Chalkboard, Vicious Struggle, Thousand Dragon, I could hit my opponent. I think I counted like 12 on turn two.
Yeah, it's pretty. There's some pretty brutal teams right now, and they're pretty fast. But I think this new set is going to shake it up a lot.
So let's kind of go into a little bit about this new set. We know that Bard and Vicious Struggle, they'll probably show up in this round of WKOs, because after all, the only difference between the Nationals and last season is this Green Arrow Flash set. So what in this set can change, may you see in the competitive scene, or may change some
of
these teams?
We did see a little bit different, not drastically, a little bit different in the PDC season. There was a team that won or took second, may have taken first, but I think second using Frontline.
Yeah,
I think that's opened a lot of eyes, and we'll talk about that team in a minute. And then the other thing is Mike Lee from California, Michael Lee, his team that won with Vicious Struggle was a lot more.
He did the counterintuitive thing by making his team a little bit less reliable, so making it a little more unreliable. So if he did go second, he would have a chance to come back.
Right. So he won games going second. It was more, I will say, an evolved Vicious Struggle team, if that makes any sense. He just had counters for things that were going to take place. So and the more that Vicious Struggle gets played, the more people are figuring out things to put in there. So I think it might slow it down a bit.
Well, plus the fact it's basically a 50-50 team.
Right.
Right. Its strength relies on going first, period.
Right. So
I hesitate to give this advice to Vicious Struggle players, but if you're playing that team, take a Thousand Dragon, because even if you go second, there's an okay shot that you might get two of them, because you can buy two of them in one turn with that.
Yeah, and that's the goal with Vicious Struggle teams, is to get two of those Vicious Struggle die, at least.
Really, Dr. J?
Yeah. Now, when we talk about this new set, I think we're talking both about the Green Arrow Flash and Doctor Strange team pack.
Yes, both of these two sets.
But I think one of the big changes we're going to see is this Rip Hunter's Chalkboard Global is going to be in there. I think it's going to be much more prevalent on Frontline and Vicious Struggle teams, and I think it's going to be hard for people to fit them onto Bard teams, because Bard teams are fully fleshed out. All eight spots are taken with a card that helps the win condition. Vicious Struggle and the Frontline, there's so many flex spots on those teams. You could take this out and put that in. You know, there's a lot you can do to fiddle with them. I think people are going to have a harder time making room for the Chalkboard Global on a Bard team than they are on the ones that are based on action.
It's almost 11th card at that point, where they're hoping their opponent brings it, so it just helps them.
Well, and the thing about that is their opponent to counter Bard, they're going to have to bring it.
Yeah, one thing that I'm struggling with this specific card is I feel like I only need it. for the first, say, two turns of my game. But something that I'm looking at that we'll talk about in a minute, I feel like I need it. And if it's not in the game, it's gonna screw up what I'm trying to do.
I disagree just a little bit. I think it's vital to the first few turns mm-hmm. in the game. I think it can also be vital to the last couple turns in a game.
Yeah.
When you roll that energy and you've got 6 energy and all you need is that one character, you know, you can put them in the prep area, roll them on the next turn, and finish off the game. But I think you're right. It's got some limited uses, and really the action itself in a competitive format is next to worthless, I think.
You're talking about the rare.
No, I'm talking about the action die ability on either.
Yeah, where it's empty your bag into your use pile.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
For every mask and shield, something happens.
I think you would have to have a team that's built for it. In general, I think it's useless, but if you used it with some of those teams that you played, Dr. J, with Escape Incarceration, and planned it right, where you're just pulling, you're moving that bag, and then you're moving characters over with Escape Incarceration, I think you can build it that way. But in general, like you said, it is for the global.
Yeah, slapping it on a Bard team, it's not going to be right. a useful action. Putting it on a Vicious Struggle or a Frontline team, probably not going to be
right.
that useful.
But it's not terrible, which
no, I'm not saying
I didn't
it's
expect
awful.
It
I'm
to be.
Probably not good and competitive.
Great, right. I didn't expect it to be great, but it's a little bit better than I thought.
Yeah. All right. So what else do you think we're going to see? I think Dr. Light.
Definitely Dr. Light.
I think we're going to see a lot.
Specifically the rare.
The rare.
Specifically, the rare. But I do think we'll see some limited with the uncommon. That ability where their sidekicks can't block, can't overlook that.
Yeah, I think it's a matter if you're an aggressive player or a control player.
Yeah, rush players will probably lean towards the uncommon because then their opponent's sidekicks can't block. Other control players are going to be leaning towards the rare, which the ability is your opponent's sidekicks deal no combat damage.
Which with her cost and chalkboard, I can have her in the field turn 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and that's what
frontline all that is definitely taking a hit by this one card. So,
yeah,
I think she's definitely. That's why I think her cost. If her cost was the same for both abilities, I think you'd see them both a lot. But that 3 cost is really good just to put that right in the field turn 2. I think it's very beneficial because it is, and I say this cautiously because Hellblazer is such an amazing card,
mm-hmm.
but it's that same kind of idea where I'm getting her in the field right away and I'm taking away your sidekicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She will be the target of everything my opponent tries to do, but you know,
mm-hmm.
I think that part of the reason that the meta has been leaning so heavily towards rush early turn kill teams is because the game has not had a lot of cheap control characters. You know, really, I mean, Oracle probably has been one of the most prevalent, and she's a 4 cost, so she's hard to get out quick.
It's because you look at that jump. You go from your control characters are maybe your 2 cost Constantine Hellblazer, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe if you count Elf Thief in that capacity, it's sort of controlled, not quite. Little energy starving. But the next control cards are 4 or higher, which makes it really, really hard.
And really, they do nothing to stop win conditions. They delay win conditions.
Yeah.
Dr. Light will shut down a frontline win condition completely.
Yeah, and for people who aren't familiar, Dr. Light's rare is sidekick characters can't deal any damage.
Yeah, and that would include allies of some type.
Yep,
so we know around here that I've been barking up this tree, and I'll admit I may be 100% wrong, but I'll go
with that.
I think an issue of what we're looking at in the game with players is we're trying to speed up. We're trying to outspeed the speed, right? A lot of the games that teams that are coming up are just trying to be faster, and you can only get so fast. There has been talk of some of the teams that are turn 2. I sure hope we don't get to turn 2 kills.
At that point, something's got to change with the game.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, you sit down, you shake hands, you get back up. That's not fun, right?
No. Yeah. No.
Absolutely not.
But there is cards.
Even in a tournament format, that is not.
Rolling 4 dice and then having your health hit 0, there's absolutely no fun in that. So if someone can make a turn 2 kill team and make it reliable, it's time for something to change. Mm-hmm. You know?
So there is other cards or characters in this game that have, I think, helped speed up teams. to look at. I think Katana, super rare, why she doesn't fit very well with my playstyle, and Dr. J, you and I have talked about this. She's not necessarily great, but I think she fits in a lot of things really good if all you're doing is trying to swing all at once. Because playing against her, I've learned that I have to realize that another character can go in. She matches really well with transfer of power, where you can use that global, because I can have one extra character or something like frontline, you know, where I can all of a sudden buy a few characters, put them in, and it's going to put me over the top.
Well, I think that the super rare probably will see more just because it has a sexy ability. Mm-hmm. But I really like the two drop, the common.
And yeah.
That ability.
Yeah, those are good.
Where you can just pay a life and put her when every your opponent rolls a question mark. And let's face it, your opponent's going to roll question marks.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, similar to her super rare, she's going to get back in the field fast, and you have to prepare for that.
Well, she can come back in on your opponent's turn. Mm-hmm. That's very important.
I have to disagree a little bit. I think, at least for this first round of WKO, we're not going to see that much Katana. I think that
we'll see some. You think we'll still see those kind of two stalwarts of Vicious Struggle and Bard?
Yeah.
I think so. I think this first round of WKO, we're going to see quite a bit of Bard and Vicious Struggle. We're going to see a few more frontline teams because it did so well last time.
I think Katana helps Bard, though.
I agree, but I just don't, like I said before, it's going to be hard to fit her in on a Bard team. What are you going to take out? You're going to take out Parallax, you're going to take out the Elf Thief, you're going to take out the Dwarf Wizard.
You know, you can't take out the Morphing Jar, which is your kind of cheap one coster, which kind of fills the same role as your Katana right now.
Yeah, and really, like, you want to pay three times as much?
I will say this, and I haven't been in the game 2 years since it's come out, but in the year and a half or so I've played, teams are successful in the second WKO or the second go-round, but they typically don't win. If players aren't adjusting, then it'll catch them. So I think you could do pretty well in the WKO with the same, that Canadian Nationals team. It'll be great. But even with that Bard team, I think some adjustments need to be made because everybody else is evolving too.
I agree. I'm just predicting this first round, you're not going to see as much change.
Speaking of some of the other evolutions, the one that we've been talking about a lot is Captain Cold's gun, especially the rare.
The rare is the one.
Which is, it deals 3 damage to a character, and if you're on its burst or double burst side, it will blank the card, which is great against like a Hulk, Green Goliath, or against that Bard, because then if the Bard attacks, he's just an empty card.
Yeah, and the real issue with it is it doesn't deal enough damage on its own to knock out the Bard, and if you blank it, they can wait till next turn when you don't have a cold gun in the field. But with a Bard team, buying yourself one extra turn or two extra turns can be so valuable.
Yes.
Yeah, it can allow you to put off them killing you long enough to get something out there to...
Like a
Dr. Light.
It is important if you're going to go to play against a cold gun, because it takes practice to try to figure it out. You have to be somewhat aggressive. You have to get your opponent to spend those cold guns because they're just going to sit in the field. So it's definitely something that you're going to see. It's going to be, I think, a pretty common idea that it can just stay in the field is deadly.
One of the struggles with playing against a cold gun is if they have one of them in the field, you're like, well, I'm not going to attack, and they'll save the cold gun and they'll wait, and then they could get a second one out there and a third one out there, and when your opponent has 3 cold guns in the field and that's what you're looking at, you don't want to do anything. Mm-hmm. It's just a stalling game until they use them.
Yeah, if your opponent has a cold gun in the field and your win condition is Bard, you have to do something to get rid of that cold gun, whether it's buy another Bard or just attack and let him use it. But it's not going to happen if you don't kind of get the wheels moving.
I think that's going to bring up the common Constantine might see some more play in that.
Yeah, I definitely think anti-hero is going
to
see
anti-hero just to get rid of actions.
So that's at the end of my opponent's roll and reroll step. I can make them reroll an action die.
Yeah, which includes continuous action die like cold gun that have been sitting there. So don't forget about that.
If they roll the front line.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, I don't know that you're going to see anti-hero too much just because Parallax. If you make them re-roll it and they roll it out. I mean, it is great counter to the cold gun because they can't re-roll it at that point and then get it back in the field. No, they could. Never mind.
But no, I still think he's worth it. Even with the parallax, I think he's worth it because there are some actions.
It's because then you're slowing your opponent down a little bit because they have to use that energy. Mm-hmm.
You have to have some kind of action hate.
True, but with like a frontline team, it's going to be really, really hard to stop the frontline. I mean, they rely on parallax rerolling to get those sidekicks and rerolling to get that action die.
Some kind of action hate, I think.
That's all right. Anytime I make my opponent spend more energy than what he planned to.
I agree.
Speaking of action hate, and I love the Dormammu, Dr. J. We've talked. You don't think it's going to be...
I don't think it's going to be in this round,
but I agree.
The six cost is awesome.
So good.
When your opponent gets more than three characters out, they can't use an action. They have to be unique characters. I get that, but that alters what they do to their field. I've played it enough in casual that it alters my opponent's playing, what they field, when they field, and it puts a lot of decisions on them.
Yeah, any time you can get a die in the field that doesn't just like tax your opponent or slow them down, but stops them from doing something, you want to give that card a long look.
Yeah, and if you guys haven't seen the Doctor Strange pack, it's in the Doctor Strange pack, and it's Dormammu, Burning Ambition. While Dormammu is active, your opponents with three or more characters may not use action die.
Period. So just they have to get them out of the field somehow.
That's cold gun. And he has that's great stats.
I mean, on level three, he's 8/8.
Yeah.
So
good luck getting rid of an 8/8 character if you can't use action die, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think action will be a part of it with cold gun.
Well, the ring is still going to be a part of it.
Right. So
the lantern ring.
Right. Yeah. So I think Thousand Dragon, in my opinion, I think is going to be a little bit more used global ability because you can discount twice. So like frontline, you can buy frontline for three. You can get frontline if that's all you want to purchase. You can get frontline in your prep on turn one.
There'd be no point to it, but you could do it.
Right.
Yeah.
You could, which I'm going to play with. You could get Talisman of Ultimate Evil in your prep on turn one.
Yeah. And we've talked about it before on other episodes.
You're going to bring a Talisman to WKO?
I think you're going to see Thousand Dragon replace the Red Dragon Global on virtually all action dice teams. Just because, I mean, being able to purchase 2 3-cost action dice with 4 energy or being able to purchase 1 5-cost action die and put it in your prep area, that is so good.
I think Rip adds to that a lot. That ability to prep it is huge.
Absolutely agree.
And if you guys need to get a Thousand Dragon, let me know. I may know a site that's selling them.
I will also say that in general, I think ramp is going to be altered, whether it's PXG, whatever
or Oracle slowing down. Using
right,
PXG,
there's a lot like that, more options out there with stopping ramp and altering the play, and we've been in this kind of rut as a community because PXG is so amazing.
Where you're almost building 7 character teams and
right.
PXG.
Yeah.
That being said, if you can eliminate PXG from your opponent, I think it's huge. And I think that the game's going that way. There's other things that you can do. You know, the team that I've been practicing with you, Dr. J, is the Prismatic Spray in my prep on turn one, and then the rest of the game, because I have Parallax, I'm going to hopefully Prismatic Spray my opponent, and that gives them no chance to PXG because I don't have it and they do.
Yeah.
So...
And robbing them of that ramp between turn two and three is devastating.
Yeah. Well, I just think if you can nullify PXG because they use it the whole game.
Right.
Right.
So there's a lot of things with this new set that opens up doors that obviously we're not going to cover all here. Yeah. But it's this idea of connecting things that are old. I would be shocked if we don't see a team that has Static Common, which deals damage every time my opponent rolls. Mm-hmm. And Green Goliath Hulk.
Two or more dice.
No, I'm very against this combo. Why would you not just use Magic Missile? Why would you put...
Because you do lose that control, and then the part of it that actually helps your opponent is because you're triggering Hulk early on, where they... they're not they haven't fielded their characters from that turn yet.
Yeah.
So now they can field those characters, and now you have to bring another weapon to ping that Hulk.
And you're not doing it. And you're not doing it on your turn, so you can't just clear their field and then swing in with this beefy monster. It's, yeah, that's
and,
it.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're a guy and you counter. Stick patch on there.
But it's every time that my opponent rolls, so I can make them roll with many different cards.
I agree.
Zatanna Super Rare, which I think will be played because it's another anti-ramp, anti-global.
Yeah, get those sidekicks off the
right,
field.
Right, you make them roll, and then I hit it at that time. I'm not saying it's going to be a greatly used team. I'm not going to say it's the most.
But you're
going to
see,
team,
you know, one of those one or those, two fringe teams that come up, kind of like that frontline team where no one was really expecting that, and that came in and just started taking names in games.
Yeah, I definitely think you'll see static. So any character that when takes damage is greatly paired with static.
Oh, I agree. And I think you'll see a couple teams with static this first round of, of Dan
KO. I agree.
Yep. And so kind of talking about some old cards, we talked about the Thousand Dragon. How about good old Z-Mags? Because we're seeing the rise of the cheap characters with good abilities, right?
I do think we'll see Z-Mags. I don't think everybody agrees with me. But
I'm not saying you
so
won't see
many
it.
Good cards or three or less.
Again, I don't think he's going to be super prevalent in this first round, but I think you guys are right. I think there's so many good 2 and 3 cost cards that have come out lately. You're going to see him make a little bit of a resurgence, maybe within the second or the third round of WKO.
Especially if they introduce things that slow the game down a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, it's a go-to whenever I see things because it cost me top 8 in my first regional. I sat across from Z-Mags and all of a sudden my team was gone.
You got wrecked by Z-Mags, and now every time you build a team you think, I gotta build around Z-Mags. It's the same for me and Joe Costa. I'm not gonna lie. I'm always like, now what's my Joe Costa counter on this team? Yeah. Because I got wrecked so hard with her when I first started playing. But I don't think you're gonna see
and then so this theme. You guys actually have heard me say this before, that Overcrush is coming back, especially with that uncommon Gorilla Grodd. Do you think we'll see somebody come with a Gorilla Grodd team?
Definitely. Yes.
I think you're going to see a couple of Grodd teams. I don't think they're going to do super well against the Bard right now because, really, I mean, it's just his cost. That's it. Yep. If you can find a way to afford him and get him out fast enough, man, he's good. But the problem is you're running against speed teams. You got to find some way to slow them down. Maybe if your whole idea is to slow down a Bard team to the point where you can buy him, like a control Grodd team, you might see a couple of those do well.
That's thematic.
I think the second or the third round you're going to see him a lot more. If not this first one.
If you don't have a block to Overcrush, though, I think you might be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So
on that same note, I think you're going to want at least one crossover character.
Hal Jordan. That's the only crossover character out there, right?
Whatever it is, because, see, I'm going to put Zatanna Super Rare on my team. Luckily, she's a crossover.
Thanks for that hint.
But there are so many. There's, what, 3, and they have energy. There's, I think, energy fixers that can only be blocked by the crossovers.
The uncommon King Shark is nasty because he can only be blocked by a crossover
that
character or by 2 non-crossover characters.
Merlin can't only be blocked by crossover characters at all.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and he has an energy fixer. So that's a good, great global that, I sit across from my opponent. They have no crossovers. Oh, sweet. I'm just going to attack here.
It's another one of those instances where you're going to see the Bard team struggle because they got to slot something else in on their team. And I think those action teams are going to benefit because they have so many flex spots.
Yeah.
I will say, and I've used this action on my competitive team, so it's not a change for me, but Banishment, I think, is an amazing card now.
Just getting those, especially with Chalkboard coming back, is trying to get rid of that die that's in that prep area.
So once my opponent buys something and puts it in the Chalkboard on their turn, you know, my turn, I'm going to take that and I'm going to banish it.
And they just overpurchased for a die, basically.
Yep, right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Same with Mr. Freeze. I know Brown Messiah probably doesn't want us telling everybody, but
I think you can really freeze a lot of things in there. I think with the Chalkboard, you're going to see a lot of things that affect dice in the prep area more.
Yeah.
I think there's a morphing jar, too. two yeah, there's cost a,
there's
a,
there's the,
the two cost and the three cost both fiddle with people's prep area.
Where you have to like re-roll it or something like that. And
the uncommon that your opponent picks a die and they re-roll it, and if they roll energy, it goes to the use pile, I believe. And then the rare, you pick one in each prep area, and they put it in the use pile and then replace it with a die from their bag.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think it's important to get the wheels rolling and think
looking
about
back
every,
at some of those old cards.
Everything that, you know, deals with something in the prep, something that re-rolls if you're going to play static, all those kind of things that really are different than what we're used to, and hopefully catch some things off guard. But you definitely have to be ready for, you know, the front line and Bard, Vicious Struggle. I think front line is...
Yeah, don't underestimate the front line. If you haven't seen it yet, go play a team, see how it works, understand it. Guys, I know we could stay here for hours and talk about WKO prep. Do you guys have any last pieces of wisdom, tips? Because I know all of you have participated in WKOs. For new players who are like, this is going to be my first big event, do you have any pieces of wisdom to let them know and what they can do to get ready for it?
My number one would be bring either Dr. Light or the Black Widow, Mistress of Pain from the Civil War set that...
She can block
any number of zero fielding cost characters. You want something that's going to slow down the front line and the bard teams, and those hit the bard team and the front line team so hard. So,
and if this is your first WKO, I would really avoid those expensive unblockables or overcrush ones, because you're not going to have time to get them out.
I think ping damage is real. There's a lot of things introduced with this new set with retaliation and other stuff. Not necessarily in the set, but add to the set. So things like Iron Fist are that much better. The other thing is practice.
Yeah.
Practice different situations. Practice crappy rolls. You know, what you're going to do on those situations.
Your purchase order.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then take every round as a game trying to get better. If you lose... It's okay. Keep your head in the game.
Yep. And what I tell you is, out of all the kind of tournaments you can be in, this is the one where you want to review turn order and make sure your opponent sticks to it. You're not being that jerk by saying, hey, you forgot to pass priority, or hey, you didn't let me do this. Mm-hmm. This is the top level competitive thing. And if your opponent's not following the rules, you are 100% in the right to tell them to stop and go
back.
Be
a stickler about the rules, because they will be too.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Thank you so much. If anybody has questions on WKO prep, you can shoot us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. Guys, it's always a blast. Tons of knowledge in here. And good luck to everybody who's going to be participating in WKO. And WizKids, don't forget about Utah.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we are back again. We have Steve the Sage,
hey.
Dr. J, and the KO King. And we just finished that lengthy discussion on getting ready for WKO. Now to kind of take a step back, because at the WKO, you see all these powerful meta cards, right? Your Blue Eyes White Dragons, your Jinzos, your Hulks.
Hellblazer,
you know. The problem with them, a lot of these cards, since they are their top-tier meta cards, they're... $30, $40, $50 for that one card.
Especially the super rare versions.
Yes.
Boy.
Yeah. So what we wanted to do in this segment is kind of give you semi-analogs that are a little bit more budget-friendly. They're not going to do exactly do what the ability of these
cards And they probably
are.
Won't be WKO.
Yeah.
But for casual play, they will
For casual play and for just, you know, sometimes thinking outside the box, because I think all of us may have... one time or another just been like, okay, I'll just put Serena or Guy Gardner or something on my team forever. But there are so many other cards that have similar abilities, so it may fit that kind of play style you like, but won't break the bank to get, right?
Let me tell you, I am never more annoyed and frustrated than when I make a team and it's really good, but I lose to somebody and they say something like, you know what would work really well on that team? Joe Costa. You know what would work really well on that team? Zombie Magneto. You know what would work really well on that team? Serena. I'm like, I don't have those cards, okay?
Do you just go, are you going to give me the $50 to go buy this card?
Yeah, are you going to give me the card? Because otherwise I have to find something else to put on my team. And so that's what this segment's kind of about, is what we can put in those slots that is not the same, but is affordable and still going to be an effective.
Yep. So let's kind of first start out with a card blanker. Of course, Hellblazer and Dwarf Wizard are your two meta cards, yep, respectively, I think $30 to $50 each.
Is the Dwarf Wizard really that much?
Yes, the Dwarf Wizard. I'm pretty sure the Dwarf Wizard is around $30 or $40.
Sweet. I remember when it was $5.99. and Zach bought like four or five. He bought CSI out.
Why is he trying to trade me for my extra one then?
I remember when gas was 50 cents a gallon.
Actually, I actually do remember that.
So what are kind of alternatives to those card blankers?
Well, Kryptonite.
It's two cost common, yep, Kryptonite, two, yep, bolts. It's a little bit, it's almost kind of a combination because where it does blank the card, but it doesn't stop them from attacking like Constantine does. Mm-hmm. And Dwarf Wizard kind of blanks all of them. This kind of only blanks one of the die, right?
Yeah.
Also, it has to be in the field, and I think it's important to remember, yeah, that. Spray is really good because it doesn't have to be in the field, so either one of those, one's more expensive. Yeah. And, so Kryptonite works really good.
And, of course, Prismatic Spray from the first D&D set is easy, yeah, to get because it's the common.
And the Cold Gun, I know one of them's a rare, and that can be a little harder to get, but the uncommon shouldn't be overlooked because it stops attackers, and it still deals three damage. Yeah, so those are good. Those are good slots if you don't have a Hellblazer or a Zombie Magneto. Yeah.
Okay, and there's one that's not quite a card blanker, but it works really well in that vein, and that's the Joker, Clown Prince of Crime.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Anytime you know. That, I mean,
and of course his...
And that's an uncommon.
Yeah, his Marvel equivalent is Loki from Avengers. Yeah. That may be a little hard to get, but those are kind of a little bit of...
Loki? Loki's a common. He's so easy to get. Yeah, from Age of Ultron?
No. He's a rare from AVX.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the yeah, blanking, no, the, yeah, the blanking common, yeah, from, no, Age of Ultron. Also a good slot.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, yeah, a good
for
slot.
A blanking card.
Right,
yeah,
and that's the Loki that gets played more. They have alt arts and everything where, yeah, you pay the bolt, damage the character, and then it blinks it.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, so to the next one. It's actually from the Civil War set. I love the super rares, the super rare Ronin, where he can, yep, absorb all the damage from one source,
so
which
good
is awesome.
I hate that thing.
But of course, it's a super rare and pretty, yep, hard to get. I got lucky that I pulled it. So what are your guys' suggestions for alternatives?
Just the uncommon.
Uncommon Ronin.
And don't forget, we'll actually come back to these level of characters for another ability to replace, but don't forget about the golems. They, yep, do have the ability to redirect damage to, yep, them, which, mm-hmm, is kind of what Ronin does.
Yeah, slotting something, yeah, on your team that can absorb damage is not a bad idea, so give it some serious thought.
Yeah, golems and fabricate will come up again, but their abilities to redirect, add defense, all those kind of things, yeah, are really nice.
Yeah. All right, so the next one was Babs, and this one I kind of struggled with because... Yeah.
You know, that ability where if she gets hit, she can deal her damage however,
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, basically a Green Goliath, yeah, type, yeah, ability. Unfortunately, both of those are really hard to get. So what do you do when you want a field clear, but you can't afford a super rare or a discontinued Green Goliath? My ideas were Rare Nightwing from the World's
I think a lot of people forget about that Rare Nightwing, too.
Yeah, he's so good.
When he attacks, you divvy up his...
You deal four damage, and you divvy it up however. Mm-hmm. And then also the Rare Poison Ivy from that set. When she attacks, deal one damage to everything. On
free
the
breath
sets.
Weapon that gets overlooked so often.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean...
That or any of those, even Poison Ivy or Gamora, the ones that kind of have the magic version of Death Touch or Deadly that's coming out, mm-hmm, of Deadpool.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not as effective as being able to do that, but still, you can use those to help clear your field.
Yeah, some decent removal.
Again, this is all like board clear, so this goes back with
I forgot one that you love so much, the Common Nitro from Civil War. That's all
right.
That's, yep, another, yeah, way, so, to board clear.
So it's all this board clear. It goes back to that Cold Gun, right? Cold, yep, Gun is also a good replacement for Babs because it's going to deal that damage. And possibly blank.
Also, Common Static is good. He can deal a couple points of damage on your opponent's turn to ping out some sidekicks, mm-hmm, or something like that. Yeah. So
not as consistent as some of the other ones we suggested because, of course, if that excellent one on the field, mm-hmm, Static gets to take it.
That's why you have sidekicks, right, so it provides you ramp.
Yeah, but still no way. Oh, so our next one, this one we don't see a lot in meta play as much anymore, and that's the Black Widow Serena, where she attacks, she deals your opponents two damage unless they spin down a character.
Yeah.
So what are some kind of alternatives for that Serena and that kind of
aggressiveness? Well, there's nothing that actually really gets close to that. That's kind of a unique card. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Kind of like Green Goblin Goppy. But
Stinger from from Spider-Man, the other Black Widow. I mean, she's not as good, but she's an aggressive 2-cost card that you can use to throw at your opponent wildly. And then the Firestorm, the rare from Green Arrow Flash, I also like because it deals damage. You can also do Cheetah. If you're looking for a speed thing that's going to hurt
Cheetah
your opponent.
Common Cheetah is a 3-cost bolt, but I can't tell you how many times I've lost her. Every time she attacks, it's one.
Yeah, it's one of those cards I'd love to show new players because I'm like, you can't lose if you're attacking with Cheetah because you're at least going to do one damage. And if you put it on a villain team, there's definitely no way you're going to lose that. Just attack with it.
Yeah. Yep. Also, we talked about Green Goliath a little bit earlier. An interesting little thing you can slot in instead of him is one that I saw the Brown Messiah play this last week, and that's Kingpin. We do not speak his name from the Spider-Man set, and his is whenever he gets dealt damage, your opponent has to either take 2 damage, or they can pay 2 energy, or they can sacrifice a character in their field. Mm-hmm. And you pair that with a constant pinger, like the Magic Missile or Static, you can clear their field pretty quick or decrease their life. Mm-hmm. So you're not getting all the benefits of Green Goliath, but you're getting a good slot in for him.
Yep. Yeah. And then so our next one is kind of a little bit more global or action dice control. And oddly enough, you don't see this card that much anymore, which is Jinzo, which was your opponent has to take two life if they want to use an action die or a global ability, right? Mm-hmm. So what are kind of our low-cost alternatives? The first one is probably an easy one because it comes in a starter.
He's been wildly replaced by Oracle, which is great if you're trying to shut down if you're trying to bring some global hate. But Jinzo brought action hate too, so I think Constantine Anti-Hero also kind of fills a good slot.
I like the Lex Luthor where you have to pay 2 energy to use an action die from Justice League.
Also the Professor X, if you can get him, of course, this is kind of
the non-PXG one.
The non-PXG ones and the non-heroic ones.
People might not know that, but
they actually work.
There's
well
more
too.
Than one version of Professor X. And one Russ has been waiting for, Blue Eyes White Dragon. How do you
replace that KOing that?
So I think the best thing to do for Blue Eyes White Dragon is either some of the things that we've talked about with Static, as odd as that sounds like, but I can use that redirection and hit my own characters. Cold Gun, I can hit my own characters, but I think the best is Fabricate because it comes with so much more. This is all in the vein that the Blue Eyes Global, you're using it to KO your characters.
Yep. Also the mechanic that gave birth to the KO King.
Yeah.
Because anything that gives you controlled KO your own characters, in my opinion, is very strong. So Fabricate opens up a lot of when fielded, when KO'd, all those kind of things. So Fabricate is a great replacement to Blue Eyes because it gets around using – I don't have to use a global, and I'm actually buying a character. So whatever damage I inflict on my opponent when I KO my character, I'm buying a character. So there is – the downside that I can't do it on my opponent's turn, but definitely if you don't have Blue Eyes, which, you know, I got lucky and my young son pulled him a long time ago. Even all the packs I've opened, I've never had him. But so Fabricate is definitely there, and it's any of them.
Yep. Also, for the other effect of Blue Eyes Global, which is cost reduction, that's going to be a little bit more affiliation specific, like Justice League.
Or Kyle Rayner.
Or Kyle Rayner. Something like that.
Yep.
Those would be good alternatives.
Yep. All right, guys. Thank you so much for kind of giving us a little bit of these low cost alternatives. So if you guys have suggestions for low cost alternatives, or if you're kind of a new player and saying, hey, I really like this ability on this card that I've seen in the meta, is there anything that, you know, that's not going to cost me an arm and leg to get, let us know. Leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst, or send us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, and we'll get back to you with some other alternatives that we can find. Okay, guys, we are back with Steve the Sage, the KO King, and a special guest.
Excuse me?
What? Oh, not the KO King. Dr. J. Sorry, the KO King. Oh, man.
Russ bugged out.
I'm totally not going to hear the end of this.
That's okay.
Trust me, guys. But yeah, one's a doctor, one's a king. They're all the same to me in my head. But with the reason why I missed that, because I'm excited, because we have a super special guest. Probably, these guys have heard the story a lot, but probably the reason why you guys have this podcast and the reason that I play Dice Masters is because of this guy. Nathan, who is the tournament organizer at Game Haven for Dice Masters, and honestly, one of the first people that was willing to have a conversation about Dice Masters for me for more than like 2 minutes, so I could actually understand a little bit more about the game and help me decide that, hey, I want to be in this community. So welcome to the show, Nathan.
Hello. Thank you.
So other than as a TO for Dice Masters at Gamehaven, tell everybody just a little bit about your kind of background in gaming and how you got into this role.
Well, that's a long and storied history that I have. Let's begin at the beginning. I was born. Okay, let's go a little further than that. I have been playing board games, card games, and video games for the majority of my life. Of course, video games is the beginning of it all, but right. I was playing a lot of different card games. Started out with Magic the Gathering, moving into like Star Wars, Star Trek, X-Files. And basically, if there was a collectible card game in the 90s, I played it. And moved back into doing some video games. I was a video game tester for a while, so I actually got to learn the ins and outs of how a game is actually made and what makes it successful. Unfortunately, none of the companies I've worked for were successful. Yeah, it's kind of
which is
odd.
Indicative of the video game world, actually, yep. Oddly enough.
The term is shovelware. So, yeah, and then I decided for a long time, I was like, all right, I'll do something with computers because I enjoyed computers quite a bit. So I'll just go ahead and go to school for database administration. Doing that for a while, and I'm like, no. I want to be happy in my life. What can I do with that? I actually just want to enjoy myself, make enough money, but I want to enjoy myself. So I applied for a job here at Gamehaven, and they hired me. So now I work with board games and excellent people.
Yep. And so the reason why we brought you in here, because this is a question we get a lot, where people are like, hey, I want to start a Dice Master scene here. There's no store that does weekly events or get a good community together and gather them. And we've heard a lot from the side of, hey, we're players. We come to the store. We talk to the store. And then it's sort of half player run and store run to get these events run up. It's a little bit different at Gamehaven, where the store kind of started doing the weekly events, right? And kind of started help building a community. So I wanted to kind of get your view on that, and like in terms of store approach on how to grow a Dice Masters community or a community in general from your angle, where obviously the store's main goal is to sell product. But how can you do that but have a good community and customer base behind it?
Okay, it's a very complex question. The first thing you need to understand is that Gamehaven and other places like this, we are a business. Please, please understand that we're here to make money, but at the same time, we want you guys to have a great place to play, good experience, and in turn, that does kind of make us money. But again, we're here to make money, but not at the expense of our customers. We're here to also make sure you enjoy yourselves. And the more resources that you have to play, come in, and reason to come in, that's going to help us out as a business. So that's the first thing I want people to understand is, yes, we are a business, but we're not just a soulless corporate robot that says, hey, money first. Mm-hmm. Getting started.
Well, let me tell you about the first time I met Nathan.
Sure.
I was playing at a store. We usually played Monday nights. And suddenly this
other bald dude showed up, and you're like,
other,
hey, bald.
Yeah, this other bald dude was kind of a schlub, but no, not really.
No, yeah, you're right. I am.
Came up, and he said, hey, we're trying to get something going at Gamehaven Sandy. I showed up the next Thursday.
Yeah, some people would take offense to, showing up to another store and saying, hey, I'm recruiting people to come to this other store. Here's what you need to do. If you ever want to do that, clear it with the other owners first. Just say, hey,
exactly.
I'm looking to build a community here. I'm not trying to poach your customers in any way, shape, or form. I want to be able to send my guys to you on these days and your guys to me on these days. That way, it works out for both of us. Mm-hmm. Never just go up there and try and poach, other customers away at other stores, because that's just rude.
Mm-hmm. But it's worked fantastically here in Utah, where we have Dice Masters almost every day of the week at different stores. So, I mean, it's so great that we have an awesome community and that it's been built. The trick is, how do you get it started? How do you kickstart it?
Okay. To kickstart it, if you're not part of a company or an organization, if you're just a player that wants to get it started, the first and best thing you can do is get your friends interested in it. Get a group that coming into a store playing it. And if they see you playing it, they're like, oh, well, what's that game? Well, let me tell you about it. And this is the reason why you might want to carry products for that. Even if it's just for you to come in and buy the occasional pack, giving them an option to say, we can make a little bit of money off of you and you have a good place to come in and play the game. It's a symbiotic relationship. That way you can both just appreciate what you're doing for each other. Mm-hmm. So get your friends interested in it. If you're, none of your friends are interested, or you, let's say you don't have friends.
Yeah, I didn't have friends before Dice Masters.
This is a great way to introduce yourself to other people. And if there's already a community in your area that is already playing Dice Masters, but you don't have friends, hey, think about picking up the game. Then again, how are you listening to this podcast?
So one of the I think is the unique things that we actually see here, especially at Game Haven Sandy, is the prize support here is ridiculous. It's 4 packs per win for our normal things. How in the world is that even possible? Or what approach do you take in terms of kind of the prize support for our tournaments?
Okay, that's an excellent question. Again, what we do is we treat Dice Master tournaments is not an opportunity to sell you things. We treat it as a marketing tool. And in my store, well, I don't own the store, I just work here. But in our store, what we do is we treat this, like I said, as a marketing opportunity. We get you to come in here, and with our amazing price support, as you said, it adds up to where it's still profitable for us to do that, but at the same time gives you guys incentive to come in here, as opposed to here, we'll give you like a pack per win, or, you know, we're not trying to sell the packs to you. That's not our goal. What we're trying to do is make it so that you want to come in here. We still cover the cost of the packs and keep the lights on, but make it so it's inviting for you guys to come here and play and enjoy it. And so you're like, okay, I'm going to get something out of this. I'm not just going to show up one day and, oh, look, I paid $5 and I got a pack or 5 packs. Well, why didn't I just go ahead and buy the 5 packs? Well, we want you to come in and play no matter what. Here, even if you get absolute last place and you walk away with 4 packs no matter what. But it's also an incentive to do better. I mean, yeah, you're like, oh, I could have spent $5 and gotten 5 packs instead of just 4 packs. Well, now you have a community that you can come around to. Test people, you know, different decks. Play with them. Learn from them. Get better at this game. And, oh, my goodness, I can't tell you how often on a draft or something, we just throw our packs at the new guys.
Yeah. It's like, make it rain!
Yeah, it's like, hey, I really enjoy opening these packs. I just don't enjoy taking these cards home, please.
Yep. That and getting me addicted to these frozen lemonades. I'm not lying. Like, almost every time I come in here, I get one of these, and they're just delicious. And I mean, can you just, like, start providing an IV version of that?
Actually, we're working on that. I'm designing a delivery method where, as you walk in, I kind of trank dart you with a little bit of green apple, and yeah, good times.
Yeah, and so one of the things, and I think all of these guys can talk to him, because literally, so full disclaimer, I was not friends with any of these guys before we started Dice Masters.
Yeah, you kind of forced yourself on this.
They were brutal enemies at first.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, the Romeo and Juliet with the Capulets and the Montagues. So
I was going to go Hutus and Tutsis, but that's kind of an obscure reference. But yeah.
But so, like, I love, like, how you encourage people to talk to each other and just have friends, other than just, you know, it's not just us sitting down playing a match and then it's like, whatever, I'll talk to you later. Like, we hang out with each other. I traveled to Florida with you, which is kind of nuts to think about it, because it's been almost over half a year since we've done that.
That was back in February. Yeah. So yeah, we're getting pretty close up there.
So I mean, like, how do you actually help encourage that kind of community?
Excuse me. Sorry, I had a cough there. That kind of community, it comes from being willing to accept other people as they are. And I'll admit to myself, for a long time, I always had the idea of, you know what, I'm better than this person. I don't really want to hang out with them, or I don't want to associate with them because, you know, they're not my normal age group or whatever. But, Steve, you've grown on me.
Thank you.
No. It's just, when you're playing with someone, don't think of them as your adversary. Think of them as your friend that you're competing against. Yeah. And you want to learn from each other and have a good time. And one of the best games I've ever played was actually in Florida against Kevin. Oh, man, we were going off on that one. In the game itself, I can't even remember what we were doing, but we were having such a good time talking about it and going back and forth and riffing on it. And everybody there was just laughing at us. And, yeah, good times.
Yeah, good times. So here's a good question. So let's say I'm a new player. There's no stores around that have actually started Dice Masters and stuff. As kind of somebody who works with a store and as a store, what do you want to hear from that person when they come, hey, I want to start a community? What do you want to hear from them to help convince you to actually try to invest some time or maybe money into it, into kind of a new game like Dice Masters?
Well, what I want to hear from them is it's not just them, not just that one person that says, hey, you should get this game, because we hear that all the time. Hey, you guys should check out this new game. You should definitely start carrying singles for this game. And if we did that for every single game that came out, we would be dead broke. But it's important that you actually show us that you want this and your friends want this, and it's something that you guys are willing to grow. We'll put in some effort to help you guys out, no problem. Great to get a community going for any game. But we needed to know that you're willing to put in the community too, the work for that community. Can you actually get some friends together and just come and play? Show us that you're interested in the game. Show us that, like I said, we're a business. If you're willing to spend some money on it, great. That's how we stay in business. It's how we're able to provide all the new games to you.
Mm-hmm. For those who are looking to do it, one of the best ways to get things started is to just do a minimum buy-in, have them buy two packs, something like that, as a start-in. The store gets something out of it, players get something out of it.
That's something that Game Haven Bountiful does, is you just buy two packs and then you put them into a pile, and then whoever's running the thing buys an extra pack and the winner gets three or something like that. And it's not great prize support, but it's a great way to start off the community and start
and it helps the store.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I wouldn't even require that. If you want to get a community going together, that's great if you wanted to get tournaments going and stuff. But if you want just people playing the game, just tell the local game store, hey, can you order this starter in for me? I want to get playing with my friends. And if you want to buy one starter from me and play with your friend and sit there and keep playing that starter over and over again, I am just totally happy with that, because we're hoping if you enjoy it enough, you'll buy packs or go from there. Just show interest financially and spiritually that you want to have your friends there. Yep. Because a community doesn't just arise from money. You know, you can spend all the money you want. I've seen games where the people were just throwing hand over fist, throwing money at this game, and the tournament seed died instantly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, throwing money at a store is not a great way to get, a community started. It's the people that make the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so get everybody you can talking about the game. Show them, hey, be willing to sit down and say, hey, I've got this game that I will be glad to show you. Here's all you need. Oh, by the way, talk the perks of it up. Hey, Dice Masters is $1 a pack. That is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the best selling points of Dice Masters.
That might have been what sold me on this game.
Yeah, it's like other games, $3.99 a pack.
Well,
that's a bit of a pill to swallow sometimes, but $1 a pack? Yeah, sure. I'll buy 10 packs. Wait, all right. they don't realize.
None of us have ever done that before, right?
Just once a week.
Well, there's one thing about Nathan and Game Haven Sandy that's done is they'll go beyond the usual Thursday nights. They'll do the win a feeds when a new set comes out. Yeah. They'll do,
the rainbow draft that's coming up next week.
Yeah.
Man, I got to make some phone calls.
So Nathan, I just want to say thank you so much. I know how busy you are. And again, from everybody from Double Burst, we appreciate that Game Haven lets us come and actually record our podcast here. So if you guys ever listen to these episodes and wonder, why do I hear people working in the background? It's because we are actually sitting inside Game Haven Sandy to record all our episodes.
Yep.
And we appreciate that so much. And again, thank you so much for what you've done to the local Utah community. Because like I said, this podcast, I would not know these guys. I'd just probably be at home watching TV alone. I appreciate it.
We all appreciate it so much.
Yeah. And so before we go, speaking of keeping the lights on, Game Haven Sandy is now selling singles online, right?
Are we? Yeah. I have actually been putting in a ton of hours here trying to get all the singles up there. I've still got some work to do on that. Yes, it's true.
You got any Thousand Dragons? Because we were talking about how awesome that might be for the WKO.
You know how annoyed I am right now? I don't even have one for myself. I still have... I have the die for it. I cannot find the rare card for it for the life of me. But it's... actually, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is one of the sets I still have not gotten up yet. We do have a ton of singles for it, but I'm still working on it because it's just me right now doing this.
Yep, and especially, I know I don't want to scare you because I know this might, but Deadpool's coming out pretty soon. You'll probably have a limited amount of common, uncommon, rare sets, right, for sale also?
Yeah, we're going to be working on the numbers on that because it kind of threw a wrench in us with the Green Arrow and Flash, because normally it's okay, we have a certain cost threshold we need to make in order to make this worthwhile, but then with the rares, there's no starters, and so the rare count went up. That changed a few things, but yes, overall, we will have common, uncommon, and rare sets. We'll be focusing a lot on the common, uncommon sets because we have a ton of those ready to go with max dice and everything.
Yep. And so, you know, so if you want a set for the next one, make sure you guys keep an eye on it. It's yourgamehaven.com. Click on the Sandy online store, and then that should pop up under Dice Masters, right?
Yeah, we're going to actually get a redirect on there so that you can just, we'll get a simple website. You can go directly to the Dice Master stuff for that.
Perfect. So thank you so much, man. If you guys have any questions about creating community, starting it, shoot us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, facebook.com/doubleburst. We'll get it to Nathan or some way. I see you a lot, man.
And I do want to say I'd like to thank you guys for coming in, playing, and making this a community. I don't consider you my customers at all. You are my friends. So thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
And that's it for this episode of Double Burst. We always love hearing from you guys. Do you guys have suggestions for budget cards that we didn't mention? Or how are you guys preparing for the WKO? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. Of course, head on over to doubleburst.com for past episodes, places to subscribe, and even some cool articles. We have some more coming up in the pipeline. Of course, big thanks to Game Haven Sandy for giving us a place to record. If you guys are in Utah, make sure you check them out. And if not, check out their online single store at yourgamehaven.com. Big thanks for you guys for listening. We appreciate it. We love all of you guys. And until next time, my friends, may your rolls be ever in your favor.